Good afternoon and welcome to the Minnesota House of Transportation. I always say that. Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation Committee for this Thursday, February 25th. This is State Representative Frank Hornstein, the chair. Our first item of business will be to take the roll call of members to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi? Representative Bernardi? Representative Elkins?
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich?
Present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason?
Present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson?
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson? Representative Olson? Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson?
Present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West?
Present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, present.
Mr. Dodge, Representative Olson, present. Mr. Dodge, have you noted the additional representatives are present?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, members. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from February 23rd. Representative Petersburg, is there a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I would like to move the approval of the minutes of the February 23rd meeting.
The motion is on the table to approve the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we have several bills that we are going to hear today related to bus rapid transit. And then we'll, following those bills, we will have a presentation by the Metropolitan Council on bus rapid transit, and then also one from Mr. Simich from Southwest Transit about how they're utilizing bus and van transit, and I think a very innovative way down in the southwest part of the region. So with that, members, our first bill is House File 602, Representative Jordan's bill, and I will move that House File 602 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Jordan, welcome to the Transportation Committee, we look forward to your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to discuss House File 602 with you all, which amends the Minneapolis Streetcar Value Capture Fund to be used for the construction of other transitways, including bus rapid transit. The heart of my district is the beautiful and vibrant Central Avenue. On Central Avenue, my constituents can visit their local library, shop for groceries, pray at their church or mosque, take care of their health by visiting their doctor, dentist, and pharmacist, and eat their way around the world at our local restaurants. One thing missing from Central Avenue is modern, fast, and timely transit. I know you'll be hearing from Representative Cagle about Central Avenue bus rapid transit later on in this committee. So instead of focusing on the why, I'd like to focus on a solution for the how, the Minneapolis Streetcar Fund. This fund was created to finance a streetcar on Hennepin and Nicollet Avenues in Minneapolis using a value capture model from local parcels. A streetcar never materialized. House File 602 seeks to expand the allowable uses of this fund to pay for other transitways or busways, including the newly proposed F line, which would connect my community of Northeast Minneapolis to downtown Minneapolis and our northern suburbs. Here with me to discuss this fund's history and why we seek this change is Minneapolis City Council Member Kevin Reich. And here to answer any technical questions members of the committee may have is our city's Public Works Department. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if you would like
to... Yeah, do you have an amendment, correct?
I do.
Why don't we... I'll move your amendment. I actually don't have the number with me. Sorry about that. What is the coding of your amendment on
DE2, Mr. Chair?
I'll move the DE2 amendment. Please explain your amendment to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving my amendment. This amendment seeks to expand the transit modes available to be used for this fund beyond a streetcar or bus rapid transit route. And I ask for your support to put this bill in the shape that I prefer.
Okay, is there discussion to the DE2? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is now in the shape that Representative Jordan would like us to consider it in. And did you want to then to call on your testifier at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Councilmember Reich to speak, please.
Councilmember Reich, welcome to the House Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Reich. I'm council member for the City of Minneapolis. I also chair its Transportation and Public Works Committee, and I also represent the city on Met Council's Transportation Advisory Board. I will echo the comments made by Representative Jordan in terms of the critical importance of advanced transit that supports the community activities that would support commerce, commuters, and of course the entrepreneurial spirit that defines Central Avenue, not just in Northeast Minneapolis, but as it extends northward through Columbia Heights and Fridley. Very diverse communities, a high number of transit dependency, and this is the sort of investment that we've been longing for over a decade. In that decade, we did do some very technical analysis that prioritized streetcar. And that was true then. And it is still true today that that is a highly desired mode. But what's transpired since then is two things. One, the sort of staging of project approvals that have to go all the way through, as you're very well, Mr. Chair, the federal level. And that timing issue and the urgency of the need have a certain, disjoint. The other element is in 10 plus years, the arterial BRT mode, particularly in its electrified mode, is becoming almost indistinguishable from the other mode in terms of its advantages in stations, boarding, efficiency, information sharing, and comfort of ride and dependability. All the things that drive ridership, both for choice riders and those who need that type of mode of transportation to do what they need to do. And so with that, we're very eager to have the flexibility not to discount any mode, but to explore all options to meet current urgent needs. And I'm very appreciative of the recent motion by the current committee and hope that Representative Jordan is supported as this bill moves forward. We do have a technical representatives here from our technical team if there are those types of questions, and I'm certainly here to speak to the policy needs of the community.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Reich. Are there any questions of either Councilmember Reich or the author at this point? I don't see any. Is there any discussion to the bill? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question is for the author, Representative Jordan. Just kind of reviewing through this, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way I'm reading this, there's actually five special taxing districts that would be, you know, so they could authorize up to five different districts in this, but nothing else, and it's restricted to just the city of Minneapolis. Is that correct?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Barr, I'm sorry, you were breaking up a little bit. I think you were asking me, are there five districts and all of them are within the city of Minneapolis? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Mr. Chair, yes, all of the financing districts are within the city of Minneapolis.
Okay, there are a couple of amendments if we don't have any further discussion of the bill as amended at this point. And I see that Representative Torkelson has both an amendment to the DE2 and in another A1 amendment. Representative Torkelson, is there any particular order that you would like us to consider these amendments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We will only be considering the A2 as the A1 was drafted to the original bill. The A2 is drafted to the DE.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Torkelson, do you want to move your amendment and present it to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A2 amendment.
The A2 is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you know, the purpose of this bill, I guess, or amendment, is really to make you honest. You opened up today's hearing by stating that we were going to talk about review bills having to do with BRT. So what the A2 amendment does is really restrict this effort to BRT. We know from recent history how successful BRT lines have been in the city of Minneapolis. Even in these times of COVID, BRT lines have maintained ridership to a much higher percentage than light rail or other modes of transportation. People like BRT. BRT has the flexibility to really service parts of this city much more efficiently. You know, a light rail line can only go one where it's built. Once it's built, it's locked into that route. It cannot change. A bus line can change much more easily. Bus lines can add buses when they need to. They can reduce the number of buses when they need to. We have a similar experience for riders in that they go to a station and a platform with no steps to get on and off the bus. It works very efficiently. I've had the experience of actually following the BRT down Snelling Avenue, which is really kind of nice because they can control the lights. And if you get behind the BRT, you can cruise right down the street with the bus. It's quite a nice experience. The purpose of the amendment, Mr. Chair and members, is to focus our energy on something that really works and works efficiently, is a best use of money. I realize this bill actually incorporates a tax on people that aren't my constituents, but I still want to emphasize how valuable and worthwhile BRT is. And if we focus on that, we're focusing our energies on a system that works. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Is there a discussion to the DE, the A2 amendment to the bill? Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call on the amendment.
Roll call. We will do a roll call on the amendment. Representative Nelson.
Let me unmute, Tom. There we go. Members, I think it's short-sighted of us to limit this in the city of Minneapolis. This will be in their area, and for us to limit what they can and can't look at. BRT, I agree, has been very successful and very well liked. But one of the issues that Representative Torkelson raised about being able to move the lines, that's a complaint I've heard from citizens in my district who are bus dependent. And the fact that you can move a bus line half a mile, where they've moved and they rely on that, and all of a sudden they don't have access to that bus line. So I think for us, it'd be short-sighted for us to eliminate choices that they have to make when they're doing the study. And so I oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. I remember when I was on the Eagan City Council, I sat on a lot of transportation advisory committees. And I remember at one, when we were all done, this guy said, "This sounds like a lot like a streetcar," which was, we were talking about that, and this goes back a few years. So again, I appreciate the amendment, but I'm with Representative Nelson. If they're going to do a study, why not let them expand it as much as possible to make sure that they're doing the best with the resources they have available, like right now. So thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment? If not, I'd ask the author to comment. Representative Jordan. The author of the bill, sorry, author of the bill. And Representative Torkelson, if you want the last word, you can certainly have it. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for this amendment, Representative Torkelson, and your wonderful defense of bus rapid transit. I think that's exactly why I'm bringing this bill, is my constituents are asking for bus rapid transit, and they're asking for modern transportation options. That being said, we need all transit options available to decision makers to make sound planning decisions. And this bill intends to expand transit modes available for my constituents and not diminish them. So I do ask for no vote today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Torkelson, did you want to respond to any of the comments that were made either by the bill author or members to your amendment?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can proceed to the vote.
Okay. With that, members, a roll call has been requested on the A2 amendment. The author of the bill is recommending a no vote, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
No.
Hornstein, nay. Vice Chair Cagle?
No.
Cagle, nay. Representative Petersburg?
Yes.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, nay. Representative Elkins?
No.
Elkins, nay. Representative Frederick?
No.
Frederick, nay. Representative Hausman?
No.
Hausman, nay. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
No.
Mason, nay. Representative Murphy?
No.
Murphy, nay. Representative Nelson?
No.
Nelson, nay. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
No.
Richardson, nay. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 7 ayes and 10 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Representative Jordan, did you have any final comments before we vote on your bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the Transportation Committee for your time and consideration today. I hope you will support it, and I also cordially invite all of you to come to Northeast Minneapolis and sample everything that the community has to offer. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I do see a hand, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I thought we were going to have a little discussion after the amendment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess we can have, yes, sorry about that. I didn't see any hands up, but yes, we can have some discussion before our final vote on the bill. Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if maybe Mr. Lee or somebody might talk a little bit about how the value capture district or tax works and what it generates in this particular district in terms of dollars.
I think that, thank you, Representative Kosnick. I think that's probably one for Mr. Lee. Mr. Lee?
Here, perhaps?
Okay.
Here, we have a representative from the City of Minneapolis Public Works who might be able to speak to that and talk about this specific fund and the parcels involved.
Okay. Why don't we hear briefly from House Fiscal Staff, and then we'll hear from the City of Minneapolis if there's some other items that should be considered in terms of answering Representative Kosnick's question. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. Yeah, so a value capture district works similar to a tax increments financing district where a set of parcels, the growth from a base level is captured for a particular use. And in asking the City of Minneapolis how much is in this fund currently, I got a response that it's about 15.2 million.
Representative Kosnick, if there's anyone that wants from the city to weigh in, this would be the time. And if Representative Kosnick has a follow-up, we can entertain that as well.
I can follow
Representative
up.
Representative Kosnick.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
I can kind of follow up offline a little bit. I think it's an interesting financing tool. And I guess I'm curious, so $15 million in the fund now, and wonder if maybe
the author or the author's testifiers can talk about how they've used those funds or if they've just let them accrue since 2013. But I'd be curious about that because, so they're taxing this area, but doesn't, I'm curious to see if they've actually used any of the funds or just let it accrue for the last 7 years.
That might be for someone from the city, Representative Jordan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, some of the funds have been used, but I believe we have Jenny Hager from the city of Minneapolis who can talk more about how the funds have been used.
Ms. Hager, thank you very much and welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer Hager and I'm the Director of Transportation Planning and Programming for the Public Works Department of Minneapolis. Thank you for the questions today. I can report that the Value Capture Fund has been used to advance both environmental and technical or engineering work in pursuit of our environmental document on the project thus far. We've also used the funds to purchase right-of-way that is necessary for the line at the Kmart site.
Thank you, Ms. Hager. And I appreciate, Representative Kosnick, your interest in following up offline. We're going to hear quickly from Representative Barr and Representative Torkelson and proceed to a vote. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this would be to the lady from Minneapolis. In the DE here, it specifically states that you can only collect this for 25 years, and it can only collect for up to paying your bills. So the first part is, why is there a fund? Why is there a balance in here if you've already got bills, kind of thing? And then the other piece is, when is your 25 years going to expire if you've already started to collecting? When did you start? So when does the 25 years end?
Thank you, Representative Barr. I think that would be for you, Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The Value Capture District was established in 2013 by the City Council and the state. And the funds have been accruing since, and the expenses that we have been using that funding for thus far is described as eligible within that state statute.
Representative Barr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just kind of curious, if they started collecting in 13, 13 and 25, is there going to be, what's with us, about 8 years off of that already? So is there going to be, in the 17 years that are remaining, is that enough to pay for whatever it is to finish your BRT or streetcar or whatever it is you're going to spend the rest of the funds on after engineering and actual construction portion?
Ms. Hager?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we have been in preliminary design and we have some preliminary cost estimates. It's anticipated that the Value Capture Fund will make a significant contribution to that overall project cost, but is unlikely to fully fund the project in whole.
Thank you, Ms. Hager. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe my question is also for Ms. Hager. Question is, how much is set aside for the replacement of capital equipment on the blue line or the green line in Minneapolis? I don't know if it's the city has anything set aside. I'm pretty sure that Met Council does not. Could you answer that question?
Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To my knowledge, the city of Minneapolis is not funding replacement equipment for either LRT facility. Line.
Thank you, Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Ms. Hager. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's the point. Met Council has a regular system for replacing buses. They have no such system in place for replacing these trains as they wear out. They're tremendously expensive to build in the first place and tremendously expensive to replace and or do major repairs. Just another reason why the bus lines are a much better investment for everyone in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Members, we will, I don't see any additional hands up or discussion. Representative Barr, your hand is still up. I don't know if you had any follow-up or that's just—
No, my bad, Mr. Chair. Okay. I'll get that down.
That's okay. No, I do that all the time. Okay, members, now I think we're ready to proceed for vote. Anything else you wanted to say, Representative Jordan?
No, Mr. Chair. I just renew my invitation to come visit beautiful Northeast Minneapolis whenever members may want to. And I also ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. So I am going to renew my motion that House File 602, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, nay. Representative Barr?
No.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich? Representative Heinrich? Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, no.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
No.
Torkelson, nay. Representative West?
No.
West, nay. There are 10 ayes and 6 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. And Representative Jordan, you are on your way to the Taxes Committee. Thank you very much. Our next bill on the agenda, members, is House File 646, Representative Lee. This bill, we are going to lay over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. And it's a bill we heard last year, and we appreciate Representative Lee bringing it back this year. Representative Lee, welcome to the House Transportation Committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 646. This bill requires the Metropolitan Council to deploy low-emission buses in areas with poor air quality. Mr. Chair, this bill addresses an environmental justice and an equity issue. We have seen a report from the MPCA talking about how motor vehicles account for about half of all carbon monoxide and hydrocarbon emissions in the state of Minnesota. These emissions can contribute to health problems, including respiratory issues, heart conditions, and elevated risk of cancer. Other studies have shown that long-term exposure to traffic-related pollution significantly increases the risk of asthma in children. And while buses have generally been viewed as a more environmentally friendly transportation option due to the fact that it can help reduce the number of cars on the road by carrying a large number of people, they still contribute to emissions that impact air quality, particularly in the cities. This bill is especially needed as we consider the impact of long-term exposure to air pollution and the increased risk of dying from COVID-19. In October of last year, there was a study published in the Cardiovascular Research paper that found that a long-term exposure to air pollution has been linked to an increased risk of dying from COVID-19. In North America, it is estimated that 17% of death from COVID-19 could be attributed to long-term exposure to pollution. Mr. Chair and members, this bill will help communities with high health disparities like mine, communities that have been identified as areas of concentrated poverty where 50% or more of the residents are people of color and are at risk for both asthma and other heart conditions, and as we have seen with the risk of dying from COVID-19. I want to add that some of these communities may also have some of the most frequented bus route, like route number 5 that goes through my district from Brooklyn Center to the Mall of America. And Mr. Chair, I'm bringing this bill forward because I do not want the state to systematically fail in addressing the health concern of communities who has been impacted by air pollution as it relates to our transportation sector. Directly to the bill, Mr. Chair, the bill directs the MAC Council to work with the MPCA to identify areas with poor air quality, to categorize its bus fleet, and deploy its lowest emission buses on routes that serve these areas with poor air quality. This does not apply for buses used on BRT routes as they have separate branding and features from the regular bus network. The bill also requires revision to the analysis every 3 years. And with that, Mr. Chair, I know that there are public testimony, and so I will defer to you on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Lee. And I think what we'll do is hear your, I have four testifiers. Let's hear from the testifiers and then we'll go to any questions from the committee. The first testifier is Adam Babel, I believe, from Minneapolis. Mr. Babel, welcome to the committee and please state your name for the record.
Hello, thanks for having me. My name is Adam Babel.
Babel, sorry.
That's all right, thank you. I live in Northeast Minneapolis. I am a public transportation rider, and before the pandemic, I rode the bus to and from work and for most other outings. I'm testifying today in support of HF 646. We're in a climate emergency, and it's important to me that we're building a robust and equitable public transportation system in the metro. We should be using every tool that we have to build a system that reduces the impact of emissions in communities that have been impacted by them the most. It's important to me that we begin to address decisions that were made in our transportation systems that have negatively impacted these communities more than others. I think that this bill is an opportunity to show that we are serious about doing the work to help heal them, that we are listening and are giving transit riders the respect they deserve. I've taken express buses, local buses. I really miss riding the bus. My fellow riders and I need clean air and clean buses. This bill would make all riders proud to take public transit. I know I certainly would be. I support this bill and I look forward to riding on a more equitable transit system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Babel. Our next testifier is Marco Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez, welcome to the committee and please state your name for the record.
For sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marco Hernandez, the public policy director at COPAL. And I want to thank you all so much for the opportunity to testify in favor of House File 646. At COPAL, we are working towards a Minnesota that includes immigrants and frontline communities in the push and establishment of a green regenerative economy as participants and beneficiaries. Currently, there are so many disparities communities of color and frontline communities have to face on the daily. These communities tend to see positive change last, but this bill prioritizes these communities first, and I would like to commend Representative Lee for doing that, Mr. Chair. We believe this bill would have a meaningful impact for these communities. Since 2005, Minnesota's transportation emissions have declined just 7%, making it the highest emitting economic sector in Minnesota. This has an outsized impact on the places that have less ability to absorb or manage those emissions. And according to the Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, redlining and the resulting lack of greenery in formerly redlined neighborhoods has affected temperature differences in distinct and measurable ways. In addition, formerly redlined areas have an average of around 23% tree canopy cover compared with approximately 43% tree canopy cover in areas previously restricted to all white populations. Basically, there are less trees in frontline communities. All these factors create urban heat islands, concentrated pollution, poor air quality that lower the life expectancies in these communities and increases health disparities. House File 646 would be a step towards equity in decreasing the amount of concentrated pollution in frontline communities. With the positive increase in rapid bus transit in the metro, it is crucial for the Met Council to deploy buses with the lowest emissions on routes that serves locales with poor air quality. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Our next testifier is Kathleen Schuler. Well, welcome to the committee, Ms. Schuler, and please state your name for the record. By the way, Representative Petersburg, did you have a question for any of the testifiers or to the author after we're done with the testifier?
Just on the bill itself, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Schuler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kathleen Schuler. I'm Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. We are a 500-member network of doctors, nurses, and other health professionals across the state of Minnesota. We support House File 646 to prioritize clean buses in communities most impacted by air pollution. As Representative Lee mentioned, the Pollution Control Agency has noted that communities with higher proportions of people of color, indigenous people, and low-income people have greater exposure to air pollution. These neighborhoods bear the greatest harm from vehicle pollution, but are least responsible for it. For example, urban neighborhoods such as North Minneapolis, fewer residents own cars, and more people rely on public transit, such as buses. Communities of color and low-income communities living in high-traffic areas are both at highest risk for exposure to traffic pollution and more susceptible to its adverse health effects. Air pollution both contributes to and exacerbates underlying health disparities in these communities, including higher rates of asthma, diabetes, heart disease, infant and maternal mortality, cancer, and overall shorter lifespan. Most MTC buses are diesel-fueled, and exposure to diesel exhaust is associated with higher risk for lung cancer, severe allergic asthma attacks, cardiovascular disease, and long-term exposure to air pollution can lead to hospitalizations from pneumonia, lung and heart disease, and cause an early death, and has been linked to an array of chronic health conditions, such as heart attacks, asthma exacerbations, decreases in lung function, stroke, chronic kidney disease, and adverse effects on children's brain development. Cleaner buses will improve air quality, resulting in improved health and lives saved, and should be deployed first in the neighborhoods most impacted by air pollution. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schuler. Our final testifier is Mr. Alex Burns. Mr. Burns, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Alex Burns, and I am the Land Use and Transportation Chair at the Sierra Club North Star Chapter. I'm here to speak in support of House File 646, and more specifically to speak about its importance for the climate. It's been said before, but it bears repeating, we are in a climate emergency, and Minnesota is behind on our state's climate goals, and these goals were not nearly strong enough to begin with. As Marco mentioned, for the last few years, transportation has been our state's biggest emission sector, and while other emission sectors have, like electricity generation, have dropped significantly, emissions from cars, trucks, and buses have held steady. Luckily, we have a roadmap for decarbonizing our transportation system. Electrification and big investments in transit are two of the most important strategies for acting on climate. The proposed legislation lies at the intersection of both. But beyond climate action, this bill is really about climate justice. The impacts of climate change are not and will not be experienced equally. Already, there are steep disparities in our region in who is most vulnerable to climate-related impacts like air pollution, flood risk, and extreme heat. Climate justice means prioritizing the benefits of climate action, like clean electric buses, in communities who experience the worst impacts of climate change. And that is exactly what this bill does, and I strongly encourage your support. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burns. Representative Petersburg, I see your hand is up, that this would be a good time to ask your question, I believe, of the author.
Well, Mr. Chair, I may want to be asking the question to Met Council, because I think I saw Mr. Shittenden on this, because I was looking at the revised fiscal note in regards to this particular bill, and there's a bunch of assumptions at the end about the council on their ability to work with PCA and whether or not there's actually no difference in cost, because my understanding is that depending on the bus, the type of propellant, whether it's electricity or diesel, that there certainly is a difference in cost in running these buses. So depending on which bus it has to be, I could see where there could be an increase to the cost of Met Council. So the two questions I ask is does the Met Council have the ability to work with PCA and work through this process of determining locations and where and how fast would they need to change that? And second, would there be any potential cost implications here as well? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Shetman, is that, are you able to answer that question, or do you have someone else on the staff available?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I will step in and try to answer that question, and I would like to speak to the PCA portion of this first, and that we do have some concerns about how we would be able to do that level of monitoring. However, I do believe that Representative Lee's bill here is aspirational, and that the Metro Council and Metro Transit is also very interested in trying to find ways to make our fleet and our system as eco-friendly as possible. And I think that we're beginning to demonstrate that related to some of the investments we're making with electric bus on the C line and our partnership with New Flyer up in St. Cloud in order to begin a way to make sure that we can advance that technology faster. Related to the specific legislation, yes, we do have a few concerns related to how we would be able to do that, but that would entail us having to have a deeper conversation with Representative Lee and the MPCA in order to do that. And to Representative Petersburg's question about the fiscal note, I apologize, I don't have the fiscal note right in front of me, so I'm not able to speak to that specifically, but I can certainly follow up with Representative Petersburg if he would like, or follow up with the committee.
Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, that might be just good for the committee to kind of hear, you know, what, after you see the assumptions, because it's basically all the assumptions about what the Met Council can do. And I think it's appropriate for at least to hear from the council on whether or not they think this is feasible, at least for the chair to decide on where this goes. So thank you, Mr. Shetton, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair? And I'll just very quickly comment, Representative Petersburg. I mean, that's a very good and valid question. We had a pretty extensive discussion of this last year, and we were able to carry this bill in the transportation omnibus bill. That's where a lot of people agreed that's the appropriate place, folks from the agencies and our staff. So, Representative Elkins, or Representative Lee, did you want to comment?
Yeah, so I just wanted to comment on that too. And for members, you know, if you look at the language of the bill, we're talking about the fleet that they currently have on line 0.12 bus and its fleet based on the estimate measure. And if you actually look at the assumption, the fiscal note, like Representative Petersburg mentioned, this is not going to add additional cost. This is about any of their current, we're talking about their current fleet and prioritizing that and looking at the data from the manufacturing and categorizing the bus on that front. And so I don't necessarily think that this is going to have any additional cost. You know, if you read the fiscal note, I think that's pretty straightforward down there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. The follow-up question, Representative Lee, is not that as an aggregate, it may be the same, but if you take a bus that has a shorter route at lower cost and then replace, at higher cost and replace it with something that's cheaper, and then the lower higher cost has to go to something that's longer, it actually will increase the cost to the Met Council, even though you're using the same vehicles. Because if a vehicle that costs more is used in a longer distance route because of this, that could make the difference. And that's the impact that I think the analysis the Met Council would need to do. And that was my only question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Elkins, and then we will move on to our next bill. Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know from my time on the Metropolitan Council Transportation Committee and knowing something about the way the Metro Transit allocates its fleet of electric and hybrid gas electric vehicles, that because those vehicles are able to take advantage of regenerative braking to recharge the batteries, they're actually much more efficiently used on local routes with lots of stops. There really isn't much of a cost advantage to using them on long-haul express routes because there's no opportunities on for regenerative braking on those routes. I think that when the analysis is done, what we're likely to find is that for the most part, The electric vehicles, which are exclusively being used on the C line and serving North Minneapolis right now, and the hybrid gas electric buses are probably, you know, already largely being deployed on local routes where the majority of the passengers are from disadvantaged communities. And so the adjustments are probably not going to be that great. I think that if we serve the routes that are targeted by Representative Lee's bill, I think we'll find that most of those cleaner vehicles are already on most of those routes and that the adjustments would be relatively modest.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Lee, did you want to make any final comments? Again, we're not voting members. We're laying this bill over for possible inclusion in a future transportation finance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present.
And we thank you very much, Representative Lee, for your hard work, not only this year, but a couple years ago, and also really appreciated all the testifiers on your bill as well for their eloquent testimony. Members, we, again, are laying this bill over for possible inclusion, and we do have another couple of bills, and then we'll move on to our presentations from MPEC Council and others. Representative Cleavorn is up next with House File 64. Representative Cleavorn, welcome to the House Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to say I'm asking for this bill to be held over for possible inclusion.
That's the motion, members. House File 64 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a future transportation finance bill. Very excited to hear about House File 64, Representative Cleavorn.
Well, thank you very much. I'll keep my comments brief as we have lots of testifiers here who can speak to the value of the bill. This is an appropriation bill from the general fund to the Met Council to do a analysis for transit improvement along the Trunk Highway 55 corridor from Medina to the west to Minneapolis to the east. And you'll see in your packets today that we do have a letter of support from the city of Minneapolis. And we also have a resolution of support from the city of Golden Valley. And Golden Valley is will also be a member of the Golden Valley City Council will be testifying later. I just wanna address two things up front about this bill. You will see it is an appropriation bill with a dot, dot, dot. And the reason is that the analysis that we are working for consensus to do varies widely in its cost. And I wanna make sure that we do not put in a larger appropriation than we will need. So I will come back to the committee and to the chair with the appropriate dollar amount later and would address any questions you would have at that time. And then also when you look at lines 1.12 and 1.14, it was brought to my attention last night by Met Council that I might need to tweak the language on those lines. So please keep in mind it's for possible inclusion, and we will still be working to tweak just a few of these pieces in this bill. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask that we do have lots of testifiers. If you would please recognize Hennepin County Commissioner Irene Fernando at this time.
Thank you very much, Representative Cleavorn, and welcome to the committee, Commissioner Fernando. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Irene Fernando, and I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 2, which includes the Highway 55 corridor from downtown Minneapolis through Plymouth. The Highway 55 corridor is united, energized, and ready for this next step of partnership with the state. Local electeds, legislators, employers, and residents from Minneapolis, Golden Valley, Plymouth, and Medina all agree that State Highway 55 is a key artery for strengthened regional vitality. In addition to broad support within Hennepin, this investment aligns with the traffic management goals of the Highway 55 Coalition in Wright County. Collectively, we urge your prioritization to invest in the further studying of Highway 55. We've met regularly for the last 2 years, expanding our coalition and deepening interest with every meeting, and have aligned on the following five priorities for the Highway 55 corridor. One, public safety. This means safe crossings, increasing pedestrian walkability and ADA accessibility, trail connections, and cycling opportunities. Number two, economic development, meaning access to jobs for workers, access to workers for employers, and access to local business for all residents. Number three, services, because a Highway 55 BRT can serve our residents through education, healthcare, municipal service centers, and parks already on the corridor. Number four, connectivity, both virtual connectivity via broadband internet, as well as transportation connectivity to regional amenities like the airport, stadiums, and performance venues. And number five, flow of traffic, because investments on 55 can dramatically reduce travel times while creating savings in construction and maintenance. The proposed study for the Highway 55 corridor is an investment in equity and shared outcomes for all of our residents. Whether you're driving a vehicle and looking to decrease congestion on your work commute, or like me, perhaps seeking fast and reliable transit options via BRT to get to work, or even if you're working remotely and need greater broadband access, all of these commuting options by car, bus, or Wi-Fi will require infrastructural investment along the state Highway 55 corridor to meet the needs of the city, western suburbs, and beyond. Together, we can connect highly transit-reliant communities to jobs in a cost-effective and time-efficient manner while also expanding the tax base for the region. In closing, thanks to the committee for your consideration. Special thanks to Representative Cleavorn for your strong leadership moving this project forward, and to all legislators who've worked for years to improve this corridor. And I certainly thank you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership in advancing a safe, equitable, and multimodal transportation system across the state. This concludes my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Fernando. Thank you so much. Representative Kosnick, did you have a question for Commissioner Fernando?
More to the bill. I'm not sure who would be willing to answer.
Okay.
I can wait until that.
Yeah, let's we have a number of testifiers, and we'll take your question first, Representative Kosnick. Our next testifier is Hennepin County Commissioner Kevin Anderson. Wow, two Hennepin County commissioners today. We're blessed. Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor. My name is Kevin Anderson. I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner representing District 7, which extends from Plymouth West all the way to Rockford. I'm the Chair of Public Works at Hennepin County and an alternate to TAB on the Metropolitan Council. Prior to this, I also worked in information technology as a solution architect. Now, I've been in conversations over the last 2 years during my campaign and now as a commissioner with members of the community, local elected officials, employers, and legislators about the importance of investing in our transportation infrastructure and looking ahead to meet the growing and diversifying needs of our communities. I want to thank my colleague, Commissioner Fernando, for her comments, and just wanted to take a moment to echo and highlight a few of the points. First, our communities in the western suburbs know that this area is growing and poised for rapid growth over the next 20 years. Current farmland is being developed, and cities are looking for ways to ensure that they have access to services and know that a key to success isn't just around housing specifically, but in being connected to suburban economic hubs like Plymouth and the rest of the metro region. Traffic flow is also a considerable concern along this route, and anyone in the region knows that steps taken to reduce congestion is going to increase safety in the area. Now, my professional experience has taught me that in order to make good decisions, you need good information. So I want to make sure that we have a study that explores the current and future needs of the region in terms of potential ridership, both from and to the suburbs. And the basis for this allows us to make smart, informed decisions about the future transportation needs in our communities. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleavorn, for your leadership in making sure that we're looking ahead to meet all of the transportation needs and connection needs in our region. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Anderson. Our next testifier is Jeff Washey, the mayor of Plymouth. Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Washey. I'm the mayor of Plymouth. Representative Hornstein, it's always great to see you again. Mr. Chair and committee members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. In 2019, Plymouth has also passed a resolution of support for this initiative and for seeking these funds. And I just want to give a little background of Plymouth's business community and why a BRT transit corridor is so important to our community. And Plymouth has over 80,000 residents and is the seventh largest city in Minnesota. Plymouth also is the fourth largest city in terms of city GDP in the state. We have over 60,000 jobs. And pre-COVID, our population was actually greater during the workday than it was at night. We have over 10,000 manufacturing jobs in Plymouth. And we have the largest concentration of med tech and med device companies per capita of anywhere in the country. In 2014, the Plymouth City Council requested the Met Council complete a high-level transit corridor study for Highway BRT. That study found that this corridor would support the fourth largest ridership and would have the highest number of reverse commuters of the Highway BRT corridors under study. Now, I served on TAB for 4 years, and one of the objectives was to create a transportation and transit equity in connecting people to jobs. This will go a long way in helping to accomplish that objective and creating a connection to the employment opportunities to Plymouth's growing businesses. Mr. Chair, I thank you, and I'd especially like to thank our two commissioners, and a special round of thanks to Representative Cleburne for her support of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm having a little technical issue here with accessing the agenda. So, Mr. Howe, hold on 1 second. I might have this now available. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I believe City Engineer Labonte is.
Yes, I see. Okay, yes. Mr. Labonte, and then we'll have Mayor Rosenquist. Thank you very much. Mr. Labonte, please state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Chair and fellow committee members. My name is Chris Labonte, and I'm the City Engineer of Plymouth. And first, I want to just thank everyone for the opportunity to speak today about the future of bus rapid transit and what that means to Plymouth. As our mayor previously said, Plymouth is supportive of this bill and supportive of future BRT routes along the 55 corridor. In fact, in an effort to be proactive, the City of Plymouth is already undergoing a study of potential station areas for this route, with a hope that through this study and effort, the city will be better informed and have a greater understanding of how redevelopment and our local investment would complement and ensure the viability of what would certainly be a regionally significant transit route. Echoing what our county commissioner said, here in Plymouth, we have seen a continued business growth as well as an increase in redevelopment proposals along the Highway 55 corridor. And although this growth was the original nexus for our current efforts, the additional work that this bill would provide would help solidify the locally preferred BRT route and then support the planning efforts that communities like Plymouth along this route, as well as the county, MnDOT, our local park districts, Metro Transit, and the Metropolitan Council would have. Additionally, this proposed bill would help cities guide business and housing redevelopments along the corridor. Although this is just a quick glimpse of one of the local, many local examples that this benefit, that would benefit from this bill, I hope that this highlights that BRT is at the forefront of our minds here at the City of Plymouth, and appreciate your consideration and support of this bill. Thank you again, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much. Our last testifier is Mayor Jillian Rosenquist from Golden Valley.
Well, thank you very much, Chair and committee. I must say
City Council,
still,
City Council.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Mayor still
Mayor Harris is going to be very upset with me.
And many of you know Mayor Harris very well, but thank you very much. I'm proud to work with him. Thank you again for the time. I'm just going to briefly talk about Golden Valley. We strongly support this bill. As many of you know, Highway 55 cuts Golden Valley nearly in half. We are a city of just about 23,000 people, but like Plymouth, we're an employment destination. Pre-COVID, we had about 13 to 14,000 people that came to Golden Valley to work every day. And so the ability to commute on bus rapid transit rather than take car would have a very significant impact positively on our city. Along 55, we're a tremendous employment corridor. We have General Mills, Care 11, Mortenson Construction. Within a half mile, we have Allianz, Tenant, Pentair, and Honeywell Resideo. We have tremendous housing density that's going on in Golden Valley. And along the 55 corridor, we've added market rate apartment as well as a fabulous Cornerstone Creek, which is a facility for developmentally disabled adults who are transit reliant. It connects to significant bike and ped infrastructure. The Three Rivers Park District maintains the Loose Line Trail, which connects twice on the 55 corridor at Shopper and near our downtown area. MnDOT is making trail improvements along the south side of Highway 55 in Golden Valley, and that's gonna start this year. We are making significant bike and pedestrian improvements in our downtown area, which is roughly Golden Valley Road and Winnetka Avenue, as well as significant investments in bike and pedestrian trails in our city. We're also a recreation destination. Highway 55 goes along Worth Park, and it would connect into and provide access to the Lopet Trailhead facility, which hosts national and international events, as well as along our Brookview Park, which is also an 18-hole golf course and community center. It complements the light rail extension, the Blue Line light rail extension that could possibly go northwest and follow some of Highway 55. And it also complements a great deal of infrastructure improvements. The legislature approved improvements at the 55 Douglas intersection that will include a underpass for bikes and peds that directly connects to the Purpich State Arts High School, which is also on Highway 55, as well as a MnDOT plan project for Highway 100 at the 55 intersection. So as you can see, there is a tremendous lot of work in Golden Valley, and this would be a tremendous asset for us to get to people to and from. Thank you, Commissioner Fernando and Representative Cleavehorn, for your leadership.
Thank you so much, Council Member Rosenquist. I am going to get a call from Mayor Harris, I know. Representative Koznick has been waiting patiently. We'll take Representative Koznick's question, then we're going to need to move quickly to the next bill because we have a testifier that has a time commitment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate today's discussion, and just should note that I recognize the need for alternative modes of commuters to have a successful transportation system. So it's not anti-BRT or anything, but I was wondering if some of the testifiers or the author, perhaps the mayor of Plymouth, could talk about the suburban transit providers and what their role is in providing commuter service in this corridor. I know the corridor is quite active, so I'd be curious to know how the suburban provider, Plymouth, I don't know what the name is.
Plymouth Metrolink. That's an excellent question, Representative Koznick, and I think, you know, we have a situation, I think, on the Orange Line now, which you're familiar with, where we have one of the providers, you know, with a similar route. So it's an excellent question. Let's just have one. You mentioned a number of testifiers. Let's just have one testifier who has expertise in this question answer it, and then we're going to move quickly to the next bill. So I don't know, would that be the mayor? Do you think Mayor Washi?
Mr. Chair, I might be able, that might be in my wheelhouse. I chaired a number of years ago the STA, so I'm very familiar with it. I was the primary contact for STA. Now I'm the secondary contact to STA this year. But in regards to your question, Representative Koznick and Mr. Chair, the STA, you know, the transit providers under STA provide express service, and so they're running buses downtown back and forth during the morning in the rush hour, and they run buses in the afternoon for it. That's their primary purpose. Secondarily, they provide like what we used to call dial-ride service. You're going to hear later on Len Simich from Southwest Transit talking about their prime service, which is an evolution of dial-a-ride. Plymouth has its own system for that locally as well, but those are the primary two vehicles. What will be proposed with this new BRT line, it will be operated by Metro Transit because it cuts across Medina, Plymouth, Golden Valley, and into Minneapolis. So it goes beyond our transit service or any service that one of the STA providers would take over. So because it's
Mayor Washi, I think we may have missed his last audio.
I just got back.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
I was just wrapping up that comment.
The answer, not, if he wants to continue, but I think I heard what I
intended to. It's a great question, Representative Koznick.
Yeah. If I could just make a comment then, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
10 seconds or so.
Go ahead.
I guess for the committee's purpose, and I appreciate the intent of this legislation and the importance of looking at alternative and what we're seeing as more popular uses of commuter services. And I think for the purposes of the committee is, with the changing in COVID, obviously we have a lower ridership, but we're also having and need to recognize that there may be significant long-term changes in commuter patterns. And so I just want to point out that we've got suburban providers and an opportunity here for possibly BRT. I think overall in transportation, we may, it may serve us well to take a look at consolidating some of those service providers to provide the opportune service that's being demanded. I know some of the service providers, suburban providers may not welcome that initially, but if we just take a step back and take a look at, are we providing duplicate service that's may no longer be necessary? So that's
my question. Well, thank you, Representative Kozak. And you may have a friend in Representative Hausman. So on that. Okay, members, very quickly, Representative Cleavorn, if you have any closing comments, again, we're laying your bill over for possible inclusion, so we're not voting or there's no motion on that.
Cleavorn. Yeah, I would just like to say thank you again to the committee. Thank you, Chair, for your guidance and mentorship as I'm learning all about the transportation world. And to Representative Kozak, I would say his suggestion is spot on. I totally agree. We want to use every dollar as efficiently as possible. I'm not a person about duplicating services. So I wholeheartedly support your comments and we'll work together to figure out the best way to do transit in the metro area. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. And I just want to thank you personally, Representative Cleavorn. I know you've worked very hard on this. I've gone to a couple of meetings of the Highway 55 group, and there's a lot of really great folks there. They care a lot about their communities and connectivity and mobility and equity. And so I appreciated your bringing them on today. It was a very helpful hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So members, again, we're laying this bill over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. I'm going to hand the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Cagle. I have an informational hearing on a bill. And Representative Cagle, I'm going to, once you introduce this, I'll have a testifier that does need to have to run quickly. She has a time constraint, so we'll move forward with that. Representative Cagle, thank you so much for taking the virtual gavel.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. So to please tell us about your proposal.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle and members. I'm bringing a bill for informational purposes only. This is actually a bonding bill, but because it sort of fits in with our bus rapid transit theme, we're going to hear it today. I will get into it. It deals with the E line. That is a arterial bus rapid transit line that will serve parts of Minneapolis. I will have more extensive comments about this line with a map, et cetera. But I wanted to make sure that Commissioner Angela Conley had an opportunity to testify. She has a very busy schedule. It's amazing. Our third Hennepin County Committee, this must be a record for the Transportation Committee. Three Hennepin County commissioners in one day. But I'm so excited, Commissioner Conley, that you're here. And I know you've worked very hard on the D line and the B line. Now we have the E line. And I would love for you to testify.
Commissioner Conley, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much. We love transit in Hennepin County. Good afternoon, Vice Chair, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Angela Conley, and I am the Hennepin County Commissioner representing District 4. My district includes a very key part of the state, the University of Minnesota, and I'm here in support of arterial bus rapid transit, ABRT, as we call it, especially the E-Line, which will be of service to our transit-reliant student community and broader than that, surrounding the University of Minnesota. Hennepin County strongly supports the Met Council's implementation of ABRT, of its ABRC system, and is a strong partner in planning and funding to make these lines safe and successful. Hennepin County staff have identified about $22 million in county investments funded or needed in the first five ABRT lines, from reconstructing roadways to improving pedestrian access to make stations accessible, especially for those with limited mobility, which is really, really important. So I want to say thank you to this committee, Chair Hornstein, for the broad bipartisan support of the $55 million to build the B line and the D line and start the E line. I want to stress the fact that ABRT is so critical to providing shorter transit times and increased ridership, expanded mobility for communities along those lines. And there's a few facts that I'd love to share. Expanding arterial bus rapid transit is really rooted in mobility justice and making sure that folks have access to transportation that is equitable. Our ABRT lines serve the most transit-reliant communities in highly developed areas of the region. The university is no exception to that. They also replace and upgrade local bus service through areas that have been historically subject to underinvestment or disinvestment in transportation and other public resources. ABRT identified and planned corridors will also provide just faster and more reliable service to these communities. And so these lines are increasing ridership. And as demonstrated by the A and the C line, ABRT can attract a high number of new transit riders and improve the experience for existing riders. I know that Hennepin and other counties are currently building out, as you all know, building out our transitway projects. And these BRT lines will provide critical connections to transitway projects like light rail extensions, which is going to absolutely strengthen the broader network and connect the region more holistically. So just to touch on a few of the future ABRT lines, I want to stress the fact that we are so appreciative of the A line, which that started operating in 2016 along 46th Street in South Minneapolis, where I represent, and along Ford Parkway and Stelling Avenue in Ramsey County. Just for a refresher, the C line started operating in 2019 along Penn and Osseo Road. And then there's the D line, which is the highest ridership route in the state, replacing the Route 5 running primarily from North and South Minneapolis, the Brooklands, and then Richfield and Bloomington. The B line will serve the Route 21 corridor along Lake Street in Minneapolis. That, I should add, is the second highest ridership route in the state. And so the next ABRT line identified by the Met Council that needs additional funding is the E line. The E line will provide faster, more reliable service in the Route 6 corridor, and that's along University Avenue and 4th Street, and then Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis and France Avenue in Edina, connecting the University of Minnesota to Southdale in Edina. County staff are estimating right now that there is an investment of $4.2 million in planned activities that would warrant coordination with the E line project. Unfunded needs that should be considered during project development and opportunities where a cost savings could be realized. So just to conclude, continued state investment is needed to ensure the success of the Metro Transit system. And new investment is critical to operate and maintain the system, but also to expand it to better serve transit-reliant communities and create a more equitable, more useful transit network to serve the state's residents. So with that, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today and for your support of this critical legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Madam Chair. Before she leaves, I just wanted to thank you so much, Commissioner Conley, for your leadership on the B and the D lines. It was incredible. I think that we wouldn't be there without your help. And I will never forget our hearing a couple years ago when you taught me, you used the term mobility justice then, you used it now. You've taught me so much about the importance of that element of all of this. So I, again, can't thank you enough for your leadership and look forward to working with you on the E-line. We'll do our third ABRT line together.
Thank you so much.
Chair Hornstein, did you want to present or should we move on to
I think, why don't we just do that? I have a couple more testifiers, but I think that Commissioner Conley did a really great job of describing the line. I just have one slide and I wanted to just share that so people could just, at least by a map and visualize where this line goes and who it serves. Again, we can just do this very quickly. There is a, Mr. Howe, I think we're getting a little bit of interference here. Okay, I don't know if people can see. I think most of the slide is available here. There we go. So again, I just wanted to mention to members, this is actually a legislative initiative. This is not part of the Met Council's funding request and bonding. So I just wanted to, even though this is a Met Council slide, I wanted to make sure that people had that that little bit of fine print here. So as Commissioner Conley mentioned, we are upgrading this Route 6, which is one of the most heavily traveled routes in the Metro Transit system. It starts at the university, as Commissioner Conley mentioned, and then heads through the Marcy Holmes neighborhood into downtown, and then through Uptown area, the busy intersection of Hennepin and Lake, through neighborhoods in southwest Minneapolis, then down France. As you can see, it goes right between Lake Bede-McCoskey and Lake Harriet. So there's a recreational aspect to this as well. Those are two of the most heavily used parks in the Minneapolis metro system. And then we go down France to the, again, heavily used Southdale Transit Center. We're in the planning stage for this. Now there'll be engineering next year and then construction 3 years from now. The budget is $60 million. The bonding request is $40 million. And again, this is a corridor that is very heavily traveled. There are a lot of young people, particularly in some of the areas that I represent, that use this to go downtown for their commute. It's very expensive to park in downtown Minneapolis. There's quite a bit of congestion, particularly rush hour. We're not in the COVID situation. And again, many, many students served by this. So a lot of diverse transit riders will be utilizing this. And with that, members, I do have two more testifiers, and you can proceed with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So next on the list is Sophie Nikitas. Hope I pronounced that correctly. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And if we could just keep it brief, we do have one more bill on the agenda, and it's mine, so I want to make sure we get to it.
Hey, my name is Sophie Nikitas. Thank you so much for having me to testify. I live in the Wedge neighborhood of South Minneapolis, and I'm extremely excited about the proposal to develop the E-Line. I'm a very dedicated public transit user. I actually grew up in New York City, so using public transportation is second nature to me. I've lived in several neighborhoods across the cities, and I've also been stood up by a number of buses. For a while, I developed a habit of wearing two down coats just in case. So living off of Hennepin Avenue has already been such an upgrade, but the opportunity to upgrade this corridor even more is really exciting. In non-pandemic times, I work downtown, but I also often need or want to get to places like St. Paul or Northeast Minneapolis. And from where I live, that can usually take upwards of an hour. And in addition, I am extremely concerned about climate change. So anything that we're doing to expand our public transportation system, to electrify it, to make it faster, is really important to me for decreasing our emissions. So I'm really excited about this proposal, and I hope that it moves forward.
Thank you so much. Next on the agenda is John Paul Yates from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed. And you're muted.
Thank you. Apologize for that. Vice Chair, Chair, members of the committee, thanks for allowing me to testify today. My name is John Paul Yates. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, and I'm here to testify in support of the E-Line proposal. We believe Arterial Bus Rapid Transit, or ABRT, is an excellent transit investment. ABRT buses get people to their destinations faster by making fewer stops and by using advanced design features to save time. Custom stations with shelters, enhanced lighting, real-time schedule information, and push-button heating make ABRT more comfortable as well. Our region's proposed ABRT network will improve some of the area's highest ridership bus lines. the first leg of our region's ABRT network, the A-Line, experienced a 35% increase in ridership in its first year of operation. And the C-Line linking downtown Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center has also been a success. These ABRT lines benefit hundreds of thousands of people in our region and businesses that have thousands of jobs to fill. In addition, ABRT buses are built by New Flyer, a company with over 1,000 employees in St. Cloud and Crookston. As a result, investing in ABRT has an additional positive impact across our state. Over the past 10 years, the Minneapolis Regional Chamber and our partners have commissioned two studies from national experts to assess the expected return on investment from building out our region's transit system. These reports have confirmed that in addition to providing more and better ways to get around, investments in transit pay off, both for those who use transit and those who use our roads and highways. Building a comprehensive transit system in our metro area will provide a major return on investment, more than $9 billion in positive direct impacts. Employers and employees have been seeking better transit, and this report shows that it's also the smart thing to do from a monetary perspective. When our region builds quality transit, people from all walks of life use it to make their lives better. It's also important to note that our most recent study found that 81% of benefits of a better transit system would be enjoyed by people and businesses using the region's street and highway system. It shows that building transit has significant positive benefits for users of transit, but also for everyone else. Investment in transit is a true win-win that helps more people get to jobs and provides benefits to everyone in the region. We know that businesses prefer to locate near transit, where employees and customers will have more travel options. And investing in transit now will generate positive impacts for our economy for decades, including additional state and local tax revenues of nearly the same magnitude as the investment costs, $143 million a year or $2.68 billion over 20 years. There's momentum for transit investments here in Minnesota that strengthen our economy and make our state an even better place for businesses and employees. The Minneapolis Regional Chamber has been advocating strongly for transit investments, and this ROI information only strengthens our resolve and desire to make this happen. We are hopeful that
we're running short on time. Are you nearly
Yep,
finished?
I'll just wrap up. The E-Line ABRT will help deliver better, cost-effective jobs to the metro and support jobs around the state. It's a true win-win, and we ask that you support the E-Line proposal. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you so much. All right, Chair Hornstein, it looks like we have a couple question here from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Chair, I should say, and Mr. Chair for bringing this bill forward too. So you're looking for some GO bonds, and so maybe your crystal ball is better than mine in regards to whether or not we'll get an actual bonding bill this year or not, but it is going to be a challenge. The question that I have is actually just two minor ones. If it's in the planning stage already, that must mean that there is some assumption about where the funding would come to. So if the GO bond program doesn't come through, is there funding in order to accomplish this? And second is there funding mechanism set in place for the ongoing operation of this line after it's built? Mr. Chair.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg. Yes, there was a little bit of funding already for the planning that has been dedicated. And then in terms of operations, that would be, in line with the existing Met Council operations protocols for the existing bus rapid transit lines. Maybe we could quickly have the Met Council. I do want to just Madam Chair, you can rest assured we have gotten an extension for our hearing, so you can hear your bill, and then hopefully we can still get in our two very quick informational pieces today as well. I don't know, Representative Petersburg, if that helps you, if you need anything additional from the Met Council.
We could talk more offline, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, but this would be consistent with how all of their, this is, I guess, Representative Petersburg, it's a good question, because this is not considered a transit way. So you don't have the same level of involvement as you would from the counties, for example, in Southwest or the Orange Line or the Gold Line, et cetera. So this is part of just the funding is similar to, a regular route system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just concerned if this doesn't get through this year or next year, will it have to stop at the planning stages? And that was my concern.
We don't want that. We don't want that, Representative Petersburg.
All right. Are there any other questions from members? I don't see any. So, Mr. Chair, are there any final words that you'd like to say on this bill?
Well, I just appreciate, members, your consideration of this. Again, there's always some interaction between the transportation and bonding sections of our work, and Representative Petersburg and I have talked about having hearings on a number of bonding projects after deadline. You know, we may have some opportunities to advance this with other pools of money before that, but we'll have to see in terms of where ultimately what the bonding bill, you know, what size bonding bill. I don't know, Representative Petersburg, you wanted to crystal ball. I don't know if and when we'll have that, but I certainly wanted the committee to hear at least preliminarily on an informational basis what we have in store for the ELON. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, I will hand the virtual gavel back to
Representative. We can do this a lot quicker than in the hearing room. So members, I am very happy that we're gonna have a chance to hear House File 1381, Representative Cagle's bill. And again, we'll meet after. I'm sorry, members, but we will be meeting a few minutes over time so we can hear this bill and a couple of other presentations. Representative Cagle, welcome to your committee, I believe you have your motion prepared.
I believe that is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is House File 1381 in the possession?
Informational. I'm sorry. It's an informational hearing as well, similar to the one we just had.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The central line. So 1381 is a $55 million bond ask for construction of the central corridor line, which is the Route 10. So this slide is the map of that arterial BRT line, and it goes from Minneapolis all the way up Highway 65 or Central Avenue, and then cuts over on 53rd, and then goes north up to Northtown Transit Station. And I know many of you got a chance to see the Northtown Transit Station when we did our North Metro tour last year. But within this corridor, you can see there's nearly 65,000 people, a lot of low-income people, lots of renters. There's a lot of jobs, and 46% of the riders on Route 10 are people of color or live in low-income households. And so this would just open up a ton of access for folks in my community. And I know all of you have been probably sick of hearing me talk about the safety issues. But this is the corner that we all stood on, what was it, 2 years ago? And this was just a few weeks ago, a picture of a constituent who has been walking across there's no access to sidewalks. He got stuck in the median on his way across this. And so what I can see is that this arterial BRT would really improve safety in our area. This is an example of just some of the bus stops on the side of the road along University Avenue. And so I am really excited that this corridor is being looked at for our area. I know it'll run right through Representative Bernardi's district, all the way up to my district, serve folks in Representative West's district as well. And so, I think this will be really great. It helps combat climate change, gets cars off our roads. It will increase the safety of pedestrians there, and also make it really easier for folks to get to work. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, the mayor of Columbia Heights.
Hello, mayor, are you here?
Yes, hi there.
Oh, thank you. Please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, my name is Amada Marcus-Simula. I'm the mayor of Columbia Heights. Thank you, members of the committee, for listening to our testimony today. I'm newly elected mayor. I am the first person of color to be elected in Columbia Heights. And since being elected, I have attended multiple meetings with MnDOT discussing where next our BRT lines could go. In our meetings, we've had many people from the community, many people of color, people who live right there in Columbia Heights or Northeast,
weighing in heavily that the number 10 would definitely benefit becoming a bus rapid transit. As Representative Kogel had shown in those photos, there's a lot of bus stops that are right along the edge. If we reduce these bus stops and made it a rapid transit line, we could invest and make those safer stops, more visible, and just less stops, so we don't have as many people waiting. In Columbia Heights, we have added hundreds of affordable housing in the last 4 years. We are building a brand new building on the corner of 40th and Central, which is going to home our new city hall and market rate apartments. I think there's 260 apartments going in there. That's right on Central. We also host the Adult Basic Education, which is a public school for adults to receive their GED, learn English, math skills, so they can apply for secondary colleges. So we have a lot of adults going to that school. We have four elementary, high school, and middle schools within two blocks of Central Avenue. So we have families using rapid transit and coming in from other parts of the city. I'm very concerned, and so are our constituents, about climate change. There will be so many pollutants being removed from the air and the ground if we can go to electric busing. And as someone who owns an all-electric car, I can tell you, and someone mentioned this in one of the earlier bills, that braking, you capture a lot of energy in that braking motion. And I've definitely been in start and stop traffic and come home with the same amount of power as I had when I left. So having electric buses in traffic areas is great for that capture of energy. So again, just want to say that I'm in favor of this. I hope that this is something we can invest in. This will help our families, able to get to more employment, leisure, enjoying the city more, getting places faster, and connecting to all parts of the metro area in much quicker ways, which makes things more accessible and enjoyable. So thank you for listening to me.
Thank you so much, Mayor Marquez Simula. I appreciate your leadership in this effort. Vice Chair Cagle, I don't see any questions.
It looks like Representative Bernardi might want to say something.
Oh, Representative Bernardi.
Oh, well, Mr. Chair, I know you're in a hurry, so I won't say, but I just want to say this would be very helpful for our community. And really, there's many people that don't even have access to a car in our community or within walking distance to groceries. And so with that, I will wrap that up, but I'm very supportive of this, and thank you, Chair and Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's also a hospital right along the line as well, too. So it could, and a large clinic center. So it really help people get access to their medical care as well. So, but with that, I just want to thank the committee for taking the time to listen to this. It's a project I'm really excited about and can't wait to see it happen in our community.
And I think, yes, so you've met, thank you so much, Vice Chair Cagle. So members, you got a preview of, I think, the next two ABRT lines in the metro area today. So thank you so much. And members, I do appreciate everyone just hanging in there for another few minutes, because we've had a couple of folks waiting patiently to make presentations, which I think, unfortunately, you'll have to pare down a little bit, Mr. Carlson and Mr. Simich. But we will make your presentations, your full presentations, available on our website, and those will also then be available both to members and the public. So if you all could maybe just take about 5 minutes each for your presentations, and then we will be cut off at 2:45. There's no choice here. That's what House Information Services has informed us. So Mr. Carlson, are you ready with your presentation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you.
And then we'll have you, and then at about 2:39 or so, I'll call on Mr. Simich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just verifying you can hear my voice and see my screen.
Yes, it looks great.
Okay, thank you. I will present just a couple slides of the presentation that was distributed to the committee. Mr. Chair and members, several of the representatives saw the longer version of this presentation at Capital Investment this morning, but certainly the bills and the speakers today have said more, I think, than I could in support of these lines. I won't go in detail, but it is a good news program and good news merits repeating. I will just expand a little bit to share the next lines that are coming up. We heard of the E line today and the F line that we have recommended that the council select as the next lines. But we also have two additional very important lines that are advancing, and by naming them, we will begin both the early preliminary planning and important project coordination. And those would be on the G line, which would serve Rice and Roberts Street north and south of downtown St. Paul, and the H line, which would connect several transit ways across the northern half of St. Paul into White Bear Avenue area and then the Sunray Transit Center. So this would really complement this full system. We are in the coming days and weeks going to be naming 40 new miles of BRT corridors serving four counties in the region. So very excited for that, for the new arterial corridors, as well as the ongoing development of the fixed guideway BRT routes. The true proposition of BRT in this form is a high value for investment. So these four lines we're contemplating would carry roughly 50,000 rides a day for an investment of $320 million. So really significant return on significant ridership within our region. We've identified some funds for these investments and are looking for 200 to 250 more to bring all of these into service before 2030. Mr. Chair, we'll be bringing these recommendations to the Met Council in the next month. The council will select the next lines while we're continuing to plan for additional future investments, both in local and express bus plans, as well as other BRT service in the region. And when we do this, Mr. Chair, we'll have really a connected network of high-frequency transitways serving the region very well. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will pause for any questions and be happy to pass it along.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any quick questions for Mr. Carlson? Thank you very, very much. And again, members, we will have all of this available to you. Representative Cagle.
Sorry, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Carlson, is there any thought about suburb to suburb or connecting some of those spokes with, or connecting with spokes there?
Excellent question, Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, absolutely. So in addition to the function of connecting suburbs with each other along these routes that then also go downtown, we also, in our longer term plan, do have BRT lines that connect only suburbs to suburbs. So it definitely is a part of the system as we bring it to its full maturity by 2040.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. And again, members, as I was saying, please consult your packets, and you can also watch the remainder of this presentation from this morning. Mr. Carlson gave a little more extensive presentation in the bonding committee, so we'll make that available to you as well. So members, our very last presentation here, just for a few minutes, it's kind of teed up nicely by Vice Chair Cagle when she talked about suburb to suburb connections. We have a very interesting program in the Southwest Metro that Mr. Simich is going to talk about. And we talk about the last mile, you know, we have bus transit, and then how do people get kind of that last bit from the bus stop to their home, or the bus transit center to their home. And I thought it would be really helpful just for a few minutes to have Mr. Simich talk about a very innovative program in the Southwest Metro. Mr. Simich, welcome to the committee. Thank you for waiting patiently. Please state your name for the record. And we have about around 5 minutes for your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Len Simich, CEO of Southwest Transit. I do have some prepared remarks. My assistant will be putting them up on the screen, but talking a little bit today about microtransit, and this is something that Southwest Transit put into place back in 2015. And we are one of the first, not only here in our region, but really in the country, to put this type of service out there. Besides operating in our communities, we have also expanded this service over to the big job banks, job sites in Shakopee, and soon we'll be rolling out across the 494 corridor. The microtransit service, it operates much like you would if you were going to book a ride on an Uber and a Lyft. You do it with technology, whether it's through an app on your computer, but we also have the traditional way of booking that service through a phone bank and through a reservationist. The scheduling software that we utilize really allows for the efficiencies that we get into the system. It allows us to reduce the number of staff on the back end to book all these different rides. And also with the routing software, it kind of eliminates that function that a dispatcher had to do previously. So we get some efficiencies that way. In terms of the pickup window, we strive to make all pickups within 30 minutes. I think we average actually under 20 minutes. This is all pre-COVID, of course. And that really allows us to determine how many buses to put out and when we put those buses on the street. Another way to make this service more efficient than, let's say, a fixed route circulator or even a traditional dial ride service. It is curb to curb, so it is different. A lot of people like to compare it to Metro Mobility, where it's more that is a door through door type service. We're a curb to curb service, again, allows for more speed and allows for more rides to be given in a given hour. And again, it really drives that efficiency measure. In terms of rides, a lot of these rides are shorter in duration. We average about 2 to 5 riders per trip, again, pre-COVID. With COVID, we've kind of kept that to 1 or 2 if they're in the same family. We do batch these rides, and on occasion, we will have transfers occurring at one of our stations so that, again, we can get the most bang for our buck in terms of the service being delivered. I'll go to the next slide, Matt. So in terms of why we put, in our service, we call it Prime. We tried the traditional approach, the circulators, the dial rides. It really was cost prohibitive to us. We could never get the cost per passenger down to a area or level that we could support. So by doing this, we really cut those costs in half. And in fact, compared to all the other demand response or microtransit systems operating in the Twin Cities, we're about half the cost in terms of our recovery ratio for those. So we've been very pleased at the results that we've had to this point. You gotta remember when we started this, and we did reach out to Uber and Lyft to try to work out some partnerships, we didn't even have Uber and Lyft service in a big area of our operating service area. So we needed to kind of find that alternative ourselves. So we're not in competition. In many ways, we work together. In fact, we are partnering and working with both Uber and Lyft to handle some of the excesses. And definitely as we get into the evening and weekends where we don't provide that service, they step in and provide that with us. The first and last mile connection, we heard a little bit about that. This is vital, both for our existing reverse commute service that we operate, and soon when the LRT is expanded out to Eden Prairie. And if you've been through Eden Prairie, you know the line is only going to be so effective in terms of getting people to their final destination. We need that connectivity, and we're planning on actually increasing the amount of Prime service and how we operate that service in the high-density work zones. Prime is for everybody. And we've proven that in terms of who we serve. Seniors have gravitated to this service, transit-dependent markets, employees, youth, general public. It really does serve the vast majority of everybody who wants to utilize transit. And we talk about it as being a game changer. Much as BRT is starting to be the game changer here in our region, microtransit is catching fire across the country. And in fact, COVID is actually push that a lot faster, where all the major systems across the country now are kind of scrambling to try to put some type of micro system into their networks. So this was very brief. Matt, you can go to the next. Yeah. Next.
Well, Mr. Simich, I'm sorry. We really do have, this is something that HASS Information Services is pretty clear on, that we have to end at 2:45. So I'm sorry, we're going to make your presentation accessible, and we'll probably want to hear more about Prime maybe in an interim hearing coming up after session ends, maybe in the summer. So members, thank you for hanging in there for our extra time today. We had a lot of inspiring and helpful testimony. Next week, we're waiting on some bills that are going to get referred to the committee that are pretty extensive. We should have those posted tomorrow, so I can't really give you a more specific preview. Probably House File 9 on Tuesday, a voting bill from Representative Greenman, and we'll be in touch with you about the rest of the week. Thank you so much, everybody, and with that, this meeting's adjourned.